So I've been asked to look at quality outcomes producing what the local church requires. And having taken time to think about this, it's very clear that it's very difficult to speak on this because of our contextual realities. And so I decided in my introduction, I'll begin with, again, a contextual framework in which we're asking this question. You know, what does the local church require? I think there's no doubt that the African church faces immense challenges and with that, opportunities. We all know Africa will soon become the epicenter of Christianity. And we're told the statistic is by 2060, four in every 10 Christians will be found somewhere in sub-Saharan Africa. And between 2015 and 2060, the number of Muslims living in sub-Saharan Africa is projected to increase from 16% to 27%. And in the next 20 years, the population of Muslims in sub-Saharan Africa will surpass the Middle East and North Africa, you know, what we call the MENA region, as the region with the largest Muslim population. But for me, I think what is frightening is that the numerical growth of the African church, where we've been told in the 1900s we had 8 to 9 million Christians, and by the year 2000, the number of Christians in Africa had grown, shot up to 350 million, and that number is still growing. What is frightening is that the numerical growth of the African church seems to be just a big number. A big number that does not have corresponding spiritual maturity or transformation. And I want to emphasize this morning that we have many churches in sub-Saharan Africa that are doing well. We also have many seminaries, many theological colleges that are doing well, that are doing the right thing, that are being innovative. But I think we also have many that are not. And so the big number that perhaps we ought to be celebrating is just that. Why? Because it doesn't have corresponding spiritual maturity or transformation. Believers' lifestyles don't seem to conform to the character of Christ as expected, and therefore we talk about poor levels of spiritual depth. And it is this incongruence that has been referred to as the 1 mile wide and 1 inch deep phenomena. I have friends who are theologians, African theologians, who, in debating this, they refuse that Africa is still 1 mile wide and 1 inch deep. But how do we explain the fact that not even 20 years ago, right, 13 years ago, the genocide in Rwanda happened when 95% of the population were in church every Sunday morning? How do we explain that Kenya, with a large population of Christians a few years ago, the post-election violence was tribal-driven, and Christians forgot about their brothers and sisters and joined their tribes to kill others? I was in Nairobi soon after, you know, the post-election violence, visiting one of the seminaries, and I stayed with the academic dean. And in the morning, his son was playing ball alone on the lawn, and so I went there and joined him. You know, this is his 16-year-old. And so, as if joking, I asked him, "Where were you, you know, when people were getting beaten up and killed and all that?" And he said, "Well, we went back home." And I said, "Well, I hope you guys were safe." And he said, "Oh, we were. We were the ones doing the beating." This is a 16-year-old without even thinking about it. He just said it, right? He just said it. One of my good friends, David Zach Niringie, some of you know him, the former bishop of Kampala, in his book, The church, God's pilgrim people, he describes the church in Africa this way: strong on Pentecost, weak on the cross.
Sure.
Strong on celebration, weak on contemplation. Strong on rejoicing, weak on reflection. Strong on vocalizing, weak on meditation. Strong on power and authority, weak on submission and humility. Strong on external forms of spirituality, but weak on inner renewal. Strong on gifts of the Spirit, but weak on fruit of the Spirit. Gullible on prosperity, but frugal on integrity. Gullible on possessing, but frugal on integrity. Gullible on possessing, but frugal on renouncing. Strong on gratification, but weak on self-sacrifice. Strong on zeal, but weak on knowledge and purity. Turned from faith in God to faith in faith. And turned from trust in God to trust in man. And you add to this the fact that 70% of those who lead this growing church have no Bible or theological training. Weak, untrained church leaders will produce weak, undiscipled followers who will constitute a weak church with a dismal future. And weak disciples make weak contenders for the faith. But strong trained leaders will reproduce strong followers that will constitute a healthy, vibrant church with a great future. And we have to ask the question, if Africa becomes the epicenter of Christianity and the African church, in obedience to God, goes out into all the world, what gospel are we going to take to the rest of the world? You add to this reality the fact that 46% of the African population still live on $1.90 or less a day. You add to this the fact that 50% of all our college and university graduates every year will be unemployed. You add to this the fact that Africa is home to 34 million orphans, and 11 million of them are orphaned by AIDS. And this is what hits me. 8 in every 10 children in the world whose parents died of AIDS, where do you find them? They live somewhere in sub-Saharan Africa. Of the 25 most unstable countries in the world, 20 are African countries. And some of them with very high populations of Christians. In other words, countries where the church is doing extremely well. And yet you face that reality. So the challenges and opportunities that this presents begs us to re-examine what theological colleges do in the light of biblical values, the challenges the church faces, and sound educational principles. And I'm sure you'd agree that this week you are absorbing it all in, right? Sound educational principles for you to consider. But also come face to face with the realities of the African church. So why should we reflect on this topic this morning? Quality outcomes, producing what the local church requires. Why? Why the local church? And I need to say this just in case we have some unconverted people here today. Why the local church? Because the local church is God's primary means to bring salvation to a lost and broken world. Yes, it's messy. Yes, often it looks ugly. Yes, often it's disorganized. And at times it looks like a loser. But nonetheless, what God has ordained. And the Lord Jesus himself announced, he will build his church. In other words, the success of mission is entirely dependent on Christ's commitment to build his church. He did not say the church planter will build his church, or the pastor, or the elder. He himself, Jesus Christ, will build his church. And the Cape Town commitment, the defining document that came out of the Lausanne movement's historic Cape Town 2010 Congress, speaks pointedly on the mission of the church and the role of theological education. And it says, the mission of the church on earth is to serve the mission of God. And the mission of theological education is to strengthen and accompany the mission of the church. And I think you have heard it said many times that the theological college, the seminary, apart from the church, has no business sticking around. And talking about the mission of the church, it is not that the church has a mission in the world. And I know we all like to parade our mission statements, right? But it is not that the church has a mission in the world, but that the God of mission has a church in the world. God's mission is to reconcile the world to himself through Jesus Christ, and the church exists to serve as an expression of God's mission. And so as disciples of Christ, as citizens of the kingdom of God, our purpose is to see who we are and not just what we do as an expression of God's mission in the world. And so when we fail to participate in God's mission in the world, when we fail to be agents of God's mission of reconciliation, we fail to be the church. One reason for this is that right from the beginning, Christianity has always been a missionary faith. Mission is therefore not primarily an activity of the church, but David Bosch says it's an attribute of God. And the late John Stott puts it this way. He said, the God of the Old Testament is a missionary God, calling one family in order to bless all the families of the earth. The Christ of the Gospels is a missionary Christ. He sent the church out to witness. The spirit of the Acts is a missionary spirit. He drove the church out from Jerusalem to Rome. The church of the epistles is a missionary church, a worldwide community with a worldwide vocation. The end of the revelation is a missionary end, a countless throng from every nation. And so we have to say the religion of the Bible is a missionary religion. Mission, therefore, cannot be regarded as the hobby of a few fanatical odd characters in the church. Mission lies at the very heart of God, and therefore at the very heart of the church, and I dare say at the very heart of our seminaries. And a church without mission is a church no longer. Why? Because that church becomes a contradiction to an essential part of its identity, participation in God's mission. So it is with this understanding of the mission of the church that we should consider the call for theological colleges to strengthen and accompany the mission of the church by producing what the church requires. But what does the church require? As generally conceived, the task of theological education is to work alongside the church, first to train those who lead the church as pastor teachers, equipping them to teach the truth of God's word with faithfulness, relevance, and clarity. And second, to equip all God's people for the missional task of understanding and relevantly communicating God's truth in every cultural context. And that's the Cape Town commitment. Theological schools are therefore expected to graduate competent leaders ready for ministry in the church, in the parachurches, and in mission agencies. And yet here is the problem. Surveys of college graduates consistently find them feeling unprepared for leadership. Too often, graduates emerge as expositors who may shine as Bible teachers and theologians, but evidence poor relational and leadership skills, and we had a lot of this yesterday, little heart for the lost, little skills at leading and managing ministry, and often they come back to the church having lost the zeal for the church itself. They no longer love the church. They don't love the lost anymore. They don't want to be part of a small group Bible study. They want to do their master's and their PhD so that they are like their professors. And one expert, some of you have heard this before, has criticized both the church and seminary by saying this. There is no, and the context of this quote is, you look at medicine, you won't find the nonsense that you see in the church. You look at engineering, you look at nursing, you look at education, how teachers are trained. And so he says there is no other professional organization in the world which allows its primary professional training institutions to produce graduates who are generally as functionally incompetent as the church permits her seminaries. Yes, maybe Mukanyo is doing well. Yes, maybe your seminary gets this. But the majority of our seminaries, the majority of our Bible colleges, they just continue plodding along. Even in the face of having done a survey, trying to find out where are our graduates, where are they and what are they doing, and you realize, but you just continue. Perhaps seminaries are one institution that even when there is no business, it remains in business. And then another critic says this, he says, seminary education in general has only four things wrong with it. And again, I'm not saying every seminary professor is like this, right? But I know from experience, I did 5 years with Overseas Council and traveled all over Africa visiting seminaries. And I know this is true most of the time. Seminary education has only four things wrong with it. It is taught by the wrong people, in the wrong place, with the wrong curriculum, and has the wrong oversight. What does the church do with those who come back from overseas with their PhDs? And after 1 or 2 years, they realize, listen, I can't pastor, or I don't even like this. After 1 or 2 years, they realize, hey, it's tough in the local church. Where do we put them? We send them to the seminary. No wonder why those who teach our students how to preach cannot preach. Those who teach our students how to do counseling cannot counsel. So how do we remedy this? Could it be that the local church has exaggerated what the theological college can actually do, given the minimal resources entrusted to them? Could it also be that theological education is in fact the responsibility of the church, and the church has carelessly and irresponsibly handed this responsibility to programs instead of delegating with a commitment to resource and to supervise. Theological education begins in the local church, allows the college, the seminary to play a part, and continues in the church as discipleship that emphasizes lifelong learning. I wonder who has told us that 3 years in a seminary is everything. And in 3 years, you graduate as a qualified pastor. And you hear when you go to graduation ceremonies, presidents of seminaries saying, "We hand them back to you." The Cape Town Commitment calls upon those who lead churches and mission agencies to acknowledge that theological education is intrinsically missional. In other words, it finds its relevance when it comes alongside the local church. Those of us who provide theological education need to ensure that it is intentionally missional, since its place in the academy is not an end in itself, but to serve the mission of the church in the world. The missional model of theological education places the main emphasis of education on theological mission. That is, developing a hands-on partnership in ministry with the church. Yes, I know that the churches, local churches, are not the easiest to work with. I know that often they don't get it. But no theological college has the luxury to go it alone. In fact, the only way to do theological education is for the church, with the church, and through the church. An education undertaken with a view to what God is doing in the world, considered from a global perspective, involving reflection, training, and formation for ministry on the ground, right? We don't train for some abstract place that is non-existent. Theological colleges train students for ministry on the ground, asking the question, what does an effective pastor actually do? And how does our program help the church prepare such a pastor? If you read a journal, you know, a day in the life of a pastor, what does the pastor actually do? What are the competencies for a pastor teacher? What are the competencies for a church planter? What are the competencies for a youth pastor? And again, I'm not saying that it's the responsibility of the seminary to produce this competent pastor in 3 years. My statement previously, it is the responsibility of the church to train her leaders. And when the church delegates part of that responsibility to the seminary, we need to do so knowing that when someone comes back from the seminary, it's not a done deal. Preparation continues. And this is why I think the church gets shortchanged when those who teach in the seminary are not churchmen themselves. When those who teach in the seminary do not love the church, they're not moved by the problems, the challenges, the issues the church faces. When those who teach in the seminary are almost heartless when it comes to what the church faces, and all you're interested in is teaching systematic theology. So, to produce what the missional church requires, theological education has to be missional. We need to prioritize accomplishing the church's mission, not the perpetuation of our institution. We help the church train leaders and workers for the harvest. The theological college finds its identity in kingdom service with the church, not in academic reputation and prestige. In fact, if what you're interested in is academic reputation and prestige, go and be part of the Faculty of Religious Studies and Ethics, because you fit in. We equip leaders by prioritizing whole person obedience. And this is assuming, again, that the church, the local church, has not been irresponsible by sending someone to the seminary who does not know Jesus and making it so difficult for seminary professors to teach, because you now have to babysit on behalf of the local church. We equip leaders by prioritizing whole person obedience, cognitive, affective, spiritual, and practical formation. And they are all conceived of, not as ends in themselves, but as a means to an end. Working with the church, we develop leaders who steward God's gifts and calling. And this is assuming, again, that those who end up in our seminaries are indeed called. The reason why they came is not because they're economic refugees and therefore the only place where you can get 3 meals a day and someone to stay is the seminary. And I have many of my Zimbabwean friends who gladly will enroll at George Whitfield College or the Bible Institute, right? If it means, you know, my accommodation is sorted out, I'm not going to pay anything. But what about attracting to our seminaries men and women who God has called? Where are those engineers and medical doctors and teachers who, because the sense of call was so strong, they left it all behind and came to the seminary? And then all of a sudden, they're in the same class with some young fellow who has come straight from high school. And the reason why he's there is because, Dad thought this would help me. And we go fundraise for that young fellow. God forbid. To provide what the church requires, we engage in an active, vital partnership with the church. And notice, engage, active, vital partnership with the church. The theological college is an open learning system, actively interfacing with and learning from challenges. I'm sure you can all hear me. I have a loud voice. Right. The theological college is an open learning system, actively interfacing with and learning from the challenges, the burdens, and the resources of the church. Often when we talk about church and seminary, we in fact forget that those who serve in the seminary are members of the church. We talk about them as if they are a distance away, and they have to visit the local church in order to understand what is happening. Perhaps that's the reason why we have just too many seminary professors who don't even go to church. In other words,
we bring our scholarly resources and insights into service with the church, clarifying the biblical message for today and engaging the issues of culture. When the church is grappling with all sorts of issues, from homosexuality to the role of women in leadership, to child marriages, where are our thought leaders who God has privileged with adequate education, who should be providing thought leadership in the church? So, what are we trying to do as seminaries, as theological colleges? Or what should we be doing? We should be partnering with the local church. I often talk about church as church scattered and church gathered. So church gathered is your local church Sunday Bible study. Church scattered is church in the marketplace. Often what parachurch organizations are trying to do. Often what Christian NGOs even are trying to do. And the seminary, the theological college, partners with both church gathered and church scattered in order to help produce dynamic servant leaders, pastor teachers, ministry leaders, and church planters. Yes, some of our graduates will eventually become thought leaders, who become scholars, who serve the church with their gifts through the college, equipping other equippers. And I think theological colleges can and should offer a track to help such scholars, help them emerge, forming their vision for missional scholarship. And I'm convinced from my experience that the best professors, the best teachers in our seminaries are the reluctant ones. Those who love the church so much that they want to spend all their time there. That's the reason why they went to seminary in the first place. But they also recognize the need for quality education. And therefore, they have one foot in the seminary and another in the church. And they live right at the center of the tension. And that's the reason why the good ones have no time to waste. Because they will not come to your seminary full time. But in view of the unmet needs of the world and the cry of the church, theological colleges must prioritize and become effective in equipping frontline leaders for the church and her mission. I hope one of these days we will have a consultation, a conference, that will help us come face to face with the reality of Africa becoming the epicenter of Christianity and what this will mean for us in the next 10 years or so. What should change in the way we train to make sure that when the African church drives the next wave of the missionary enterprise, we do it well? What should change? It cannot be business as usual. It cannot. And so the missional model of theological education reminds us that the measure of a school's quality is in how well the church and its mission is served. How well is your seminary, your theological college doing? You measure that by looking at how well the church and its mission is served. The church is served in its graduates' ministry success, not in the faculty's professional standing among their peers. Indeed, students need to sit under quality faculty, but the measure of faculty quality will be who they are and the nature of their influence on their students. We have to ask, does their influence help students serve the church better? And let me close with this. Our graduates are our true letters of recommendation, known and read by everybody. A letter from Christ, the result of our ministry, written not with ink but with the Spirit of the living God. They are the best advert for the quality of education we offer. The quality of their service to the church is the end by which we should assess the means we employ in theological education.